So what is being explained here is Kamsa has been notified that the eighth child of Devaki is now born. And so now his apprehension has reached, you know, red alert. So now he runs to the prison to destroy that child. But then what happened was that Krishna arranged for his him to be transferred to Vrindavan by Vasudev, and the younger sister, or Devi, was taken from Yasoda, who was born simultaneously with Vrindavan Krishna, was exchanged with Vaikuntha Krishna, who merged into Vrindavan Krishna, became one Krishna. Because Krishna took birth in two places simultaneously, in the jail and in Vrindavan. So when Vasudev brought the child across the Jamuna to Vrindavan, he didn't see Vrindavan Krishna there. All he saw was a girl. And so he laid the boy down and took the girl. Now that boy was Vaikuntha Krishna, was born with Devaki, or appeared from Devaki in the Kamsa's jail cell. And those two Krishnas merged together and then became one Krishna, the Vrindavan Krishna, with the manifestation of Vaikuntha Krishna within Vrindavan Krishna, because Krishna is always complete with all manifestations of himself. And so the child, the girl child, was taken to the jail cell and given back to Devaki. Now Kamsa comes and he's expecting to see this boy, but it's a girl. And Devaki is very, very overwhelmed with emotion now that Kamsa is going to kill this girl. He's already killed six sons. The seventh was actually Balaram, who was transformed by the internal energy to Vrindavan to appear within the room of Rohini. So both Krishna and Balaram appeared in Vrindavan and were removed from the jail cell of Kamsa to protect them. Now this girl is there and Kamsa comes in. And Devaki is saying, "It's a girl, my dear brother, it's a girl. So you shouldn't harm this child." But he's so, you know, absorbed in fear that he can't think beyond that. But he just thinks, eighth child, boy, girl, doesn't matter. So this is what's happening. And now here it says, verse number 8. Having uprooted all relationships with his sister because of intense selfishness, Kamsa, who was sitting on his knees, grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to dash her against the surface of a stone. This is the epitome of child abuse. And so there's child abuse that happened years ago, too. Kamsa was like the leader of child abuse. Okay, so now verse number 9. The child, Yogamaya Devi, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, slipped upward from Kamsa's hands and appeared in the sky as Devi, the goddess Durga, with eight arms, completely equipped with weapons. Purport. Kamsa tried to dash the child downward against a piece of stone, but since she was Yogamaya, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, she slipped upward and assumed the form of the goddess Durga. The word Anuja, meaning the younger sister, is significant. When Vishnu, or Krishna, took birth from Devaki, he must have simultaneously taken birth from Yasoda also. Otherwise, how could Yogamaya have been Anuja, the Lord's younger sister? So that explains why she is referred to as younger sister, because she actually took birth in Vrindavan, or appeared in Vrindavan, along with Krishna. Om Agyan Timirandasya Ginajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapnitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swampadantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Kamsa gets a big surprise. We speak about Kamsa a little bit. He is the epitome or the manifestation of fear. Fear is a principle that exists within the material energy. And everyone who lives in the material world or has a material existence is fearful. And Prabhupada qualifies that statement by saying even Lord Indra, who is the king of heaven and has such great power and influence and control, still, he's fearful. And then Prabhupada goes on to explain, from the highest living entity in the material world, even Brahma, down to the lowest, the element of fear exists in some proportion within that living entity. But Kamsa, being a demon, and his only mood is to destroy everyone who appears to oppose him and establish his selfish rule so he can exploit the material energy, is now being challenged in his position by a prophecy that says, the eighth child is going to destroy you. So you can imagine how fearful he is. In fact, he can't even sleep. He looks in the mirror. He can't see his own reflection. He sees his shadow and it has holes in it. He sees himself being carried by a cart full of donkeys, which are all indications of his imminent death, or very, what we say, soon-to-come death. So now he hears the prophecy is manifested, the eighth child. So he is so fearful. And so when a person is fearful, they lose all sense of, what we say, reasoning. So Devaki's trying to reason. It's a girl. There's no worry from this child. You don't have anything to worry about. And please, I'm your sister. You already killed six of my children. She's pleading with him in a very emotional way as a brother. He's her. Can't hear anything. He's just absorbed in his fearfulness. And we see in the material world how people make big elaborate arrangements to overcome fear, right? Or at least to give a false sense of security that they're okay. We have eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. These are the four bodily principles that exists within all species of life, human and lower. Well, what is this? One of the strongest is the fearing propensity. Fearful, because I have to protect my eating, sleeping, and mating. Therefore, fear takes the form of making arrangements to protect that in so many ways. And when it expands itself outward, it becomes a national policy that this nation is against our nation, so we have to have more bombs, we have to have more military, we have to tax the people, get more and more money in order to protect ourselves. So you see throughout the world what is the highest form of government investment. It's military. Actually, someone told me just recently that the United States of America will have the amount of money they'll spend on defenses will be up to $1 trillion. $1 trillion. Fear. Yeah, so this fear propensity is so strong that it causes people to become, what we say, neurotic. I have to protect my existence. I have to protect the existence of my family members, my society, my country, so many things. So you see, like that, and just like everywhere you go, Now, you see locks on every door, right? There's locks, bars, chains, guards. One of the biggest agencies is security, right? Everyone's fearful. We travel from country to country. We go through the, you know, the airports, and they say, oh, what is this? You look like something that might be dangerous. So they give you extra, you know, what we say, checks. non-form-fitting clothing, this is called in America. It doesn't fit your form. So therefore, you could definitely hide some bombs under there. Yeah, that's what they... I ask him, why... The buzzer didn't go off. Why are you searching me? Non-form-fitting clothing. That's our rule. And don't say anything, because if you say anything, that's worse. So such fear is everywhere. People are really, like, everywhere. And so this fear propensity is such an element. And Prabhupada explains, what is fear? He gives a definition. He says, in a very succinct, very easy to understand way, fear is two. That's all. One, two, the number two. Fear is two. So explanation means when you see something outside of Krishna, which there is nothing outside of Krishna, that is called the element of fear. For a devotee knows that everything is within Krishna, and Krishna is the ultimate controller. So therefore, one of the qualities of a devotee is fearlessness, because they know that Krishna is always there to protect. And if Krishna fails to protect, that's another form of protection, in the sense that that was Krishna's will also. But Krishna always protects his devotees. So a devotee has no fear. But fear exists in that element of seeing something outside of Krishna, which there's nothing. There's either Krishna and Krishna's energy. And Krishna says, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam Hetu Nananakantya Jigabhibhavipar. The energy works under my direction. This energy is controlled by me, not 95%. Just like there was one person who wrote a book, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? And they couldn't rationalize it. For years, everyone was trying to understand why there's so many good people are having bad luck. Why is that? So one rabbi, this was back in the 60s, wrote this book, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? And he actually explained something that is completely bogus. He said, well, God is very good, but he's not all-powerful. He gave a new definition of God. Because he's got a lot to do, and I mean, it's not easy to manage all the universes and then also dance with the gopis. So he has to keep, he's got a lot of things going, you know. He's 24/7. And so he's busy, so sometimes he misses some things. Kind of somehow or other, it slips through his, you know, his radar. And then somehow things go on like that. So, and then that book became a bestseller. One of the biggest bestseller in the history of bestsellers. Because it seemed to give an answer to the question, why do bad things happen to good people? Because, you know, God likes you, he tries, but sometimes he just doesn't get it all the time. And when we wrote a counter statement to the book, in fact, it was not only a statement, it was an article written by Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, bad things don't happen to good people, bad things happen to bad people. And then we explained reincarnation and karma in a very detailed way as a rebuttal for that article. So we have the understanding, you know, God is all-powerful. That's one of his. And he's all-knowing. And he's also very, very kind. And so for his devotees know, Devotee tries to see Krishna in everything and everything in Krishna, knowing there's nothing can happen without the will of Krishna. And if one steps outside of the will of Krishna and acts independently of that will, the material energy, which is also his energy, pushes you back towards Krishna in the form of some reprimand, some chastisement, something to let you know you're outside of that energy, Krishna's sweet energy. But that's also his mercy too. So Krishna is always fully in control. So therefore, those who don't worship God, they see they're always in fear. Why? Because they always think that it's by what they do and how they plan and so many other chants, they call it, things could happen. But we don't accept that. We know nothing happens without the will of God. So therefore, devotee is not fearful, because devotee knows Krishna is there. Now, the proportion of one's fear, speaking about the karmis again, is in proportion to how much one is absorbed in material life. We might also see within our own life, we have some fear, of course. There's always fear, maybe some fear of losing this body that we have, which will come eventually anyway. But we think, maybe according to my plan, it shouldn't happen right now. Maybe a little later. Krishna, give me some time. And so we have our plan on how long things are supposed to go on. But maybe Krishna has another plan. We don't know. Anyway, we try to do our best in following Krishna's order and depend on his mercy in all situations. That is our success in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, the degree you can come to that consciousness of depending on Krishna and being free from fear is how much you're free from the material attachments. The more you're free from material desires and attachments and the activities that come by these desires, the more that element of fearlessness manifests. Because when we see the non-devotees, they are very fearful in proportion to how much they're absorbed in material life. So the more one is absorbed, the greater the fear. There's one statement. And that's why in order to be successful in material life, you have to do one thing, very important. This is rule number one in material life. If you want to be successful, forget that death exists. That way you can step on the accelerator and go for all your plans. Death is, all right, okay, but don't remind me. But a devotee knows the opposite. That the devotee knows that the more I become aware of the temporary nature of this world, and the importance of using whatever time is left in devotional service, the more I'm successful. Devotees are not an illusion that I'm going to live for a long time and therefore I have some enjoyment to make up in between, and then I'll get serious. Devotees know that this world is padam padam ya vipadam. It's very dangerous. It's a dangerous place. So, well, we know Krishna protects, so we're not fearful. But still, we're always aware of the time element, how to use our time to become Krishna conscious like that. So therefore, this element of fear doesn't bother the devotees, because the devotees know everything is controlled by Krishna. And so, let me just use my time in the best possible way, become Krishna conscious. Kamsa, now we'll switch subjects a little bit. He's seeing the person he worships. Interesting. He's a devotee of Durga. He worships Durga Devi. That's his Ista Devi, his main. Now she flies up in the sky and has eight arms with weapons and starts chastising her disciple. You rascal. Who do you think you are? You can't kill me. In fact, the person who's going to kill you is somewhere else. So, Kamsa, you know, take heed. Your time is getting shorter and shorter. And so now, of course, you'll see after in a few verses how Kamsa's mood changes after he sees Durga Devi. Now, it's interesting, and in the next few verses, and it says that this internal energy of the Lord, the Shakti energy, manifests itself as the younger sister of Krishna is Yogamaya. That's what it says here. The child Yogamaya, the younger sister. But now she manifests herself as Mahamaya. So is she Yogamaya or is she Mahamaya? Which one? Both. That's right, yeah. She's both. She's for the devotee. She's the internal energy that brings about arrangements for the devotee to engage in devotional service and helps to manifest Krishna's pastimes in such a way that she hides the, what we say, the non-devotees from understanding Krishna's pastimes like that. She's a very powerful energy, and she's one of Krishna's principal energies. And so she acts in such a way, for the devotees, she manifests Krishna consciousness like that. So that's why sometimes we can't figure out Krishna's pastimes because of Yogamaya. But the more we become Krishna conscious, more the more Yogamaya arranges for one to understand more and more Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's activities, his qualities, his forms, his names. But for the non-devotee, she simply hides. And Prabhupada explains in the 10th canto, the same canto, in the very beginning, in the first chapter, that the same energy manifests itself in two different ways. It's only one energy. Jai Sisi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai Gornitai Ki Jai. It's only one energy, but it's manifested in two different ways. And this is interesting. The energy is one, but for the non-devotees, it is what we say the illusionary energy. And for the devotees, it's that energy, the Shakti energy, that brings them more and more closer to Krishna. So the energy is the same. And Prabhupada gives a very simple definition. Just like electricity is one, but when it comes through a refrigerator, it emanates as a cooling energy. When it comes through a heater, it manifests itself as heat. Same energy. The receptacle causes the energy to be experienced in different ways, but the energy is one. So this is Mahamaya because it's Kamsa. But for the devotees, it is what we say, spiritual energy, Yogamaya, Subhadra, just like Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra Maharani. Yeah, she is the internal energy. She's Yogamaya. She's Krishna's younger sister. She assists Krishna in his transcendental pastimes like that. And this energy is manifested throughout the world in different forms of itself, according to the nature of the reciprocal. In other words, she becomes more and more fierce according to how much a person is absorbed in material energy. And then you'll see in the remaining verses, or in the upcoming verses, she has different names. Like it says Vijaya, what else? Durga, Bhadrakali, Chandi, Vyavalali. So many different names. Vyavalali. If you go into different places of India, it's the same personality is worshipped in different ways, but through different names. And the forms are also slightly different like that. In her most fearful form, she is Mahakali, where she has 16 arms and she's just ripping apart the demons like that. But she's the same energy. But for the devotees, she's Subhadra. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. Sweet younger sister of Krishna. who we, when we have Ratha Yatra, we honor her as just as much as we honor Baladev and Jagannath. So this is the manifestation of the internal energy as it comes in the form of the... So sometimes, I guess the question is asked... I was thinking of this question this morning, and I couldn't come up with a complete answer. I was thinking if I could only ask Prabhupada this answer or somebody, that if a devotee is still mixed with material desires but is performing devotional service, is she Mahamaya or Yogamaya? Is there a form in between that's for the devotees who still are attached to and somewhat engaged in material activities? Anyone want to do some philosophical speculation?